From the shores of the Colorado River on the beautiful Parker Strip, you're listening to the Parker Livecast.
On the phone, James Burns. James, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good. Where are you at? You're at an airport or something like that?
So right now I'm on my way to the airport from Sundance Film Festival, heading to Salt Lake International and back home to New York.
How was Sundance? Was there some good stuff there?
Yeah, there were a lot of amazing films, and it was a good place to be to just kind of watch movies, listen to interesting conversations, and decompress a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I was thinking it must be like, you know, being at a film festival so soon after this experience must be just like almost like overstimulation in a way, because you had such a lack of stimulation when you were in lockup.
Yeah, it can be a little overwhelming at times. The festivals are quite busy and rowdy. And so I was here to support my producing partner who sold a film called Ingrid Goes West.
Nice.
Which will have a wide theatrical release.
Oh, that's awesome. And did he get that that deal at Sundance, or was it already in place before he went?
Yeah, so he made that deal here at Sundance.
That's awesome.
And, looks like they closed yesterday.
Oh, congratulations on that to him. That's awesome. It's hard to make something and you know get it recognized and have people wanna take it further and do something with it, and you know it's kind of legitimizes your work a lot.
Absolutely, I think we all kind of have these invisible signs that say validate me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, James, I'm here with Captain Bagby now. He's a lieutenant whenever you met him. You know, we've been talking a lot. I've been watching you. I was watching you for a month. I mean, it's kind of weird. You know what I mean? I feel like I know you in a way.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because I think a lot of people felt that way when the live stream was over. We're kind of sad. They said, wow, it feels like we were with you that entire time and we're so used to checking in, and now the live stream is over, and
yeah.
It feels weird to have a little postpartum.
It is. No, it is. It's weird. I mean, I feel that. I don't know, Bagby, do you feel like, I mean, you actually went in and saw James every day, so it kind of must feel weird that he's not there anymore.
Yeah, it was different for me because I literally felt bad.
Yeah,
I had to look in his eyes and shut the door on him. I hated it. So,
did you tell him this thing about like how the sound of the door closing?
Yeah,
you know, it's
I
that was one thing even that I saw when I would see those moments where you kind of had to leave the cell and shut the door behind him again, and I'd see the look on James' face afterwards, and it's like,
it's horrible.
Did you feel that, James? Like when someone left you alone again, did it feel that way, or did it feel like how I'm imagining it?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I pretty much look forward to talking with Kurt every day when he would come in and check.
And yeah. That's bad. When somebody wants to talk to me, that's really bad.
Yes.
And so, yeah, after he'd leave, you know, it's that feeling like, okay, it's back to that cell, and that feeling that you're kind of been working to get over, you know, all day long.
I mean,
so
we know the backstory. So, you know, essentially, when you go into that cell, you're doing something much braver even than what I would be doing if I went in, and that is saying a lot because, like, I feel very cowardly about the situation. But like, you would go in there and you're actually reliving a traumatic experience in a way, like you were triggering yourself.
Yeah, I kind of expected that to happen. You know, I knew I was going to regress a little bit, but I felt like La Paz County handled it in a very professional way. There was no point where I felt like something absolutely terrible was going to happen to me, or, you know, that I wasn't going to get out of there in time if I felt like I was going to crack, you know.
You at least knew that you were essentially safe.
Exactly. You know, I didn't, there was no point where I felt like I was going to completely lose it or something bad was going to happen to me. It was definitely very, very painful. And knowing that I'm going to get out after 30 days, knowing that there are people checking in on me, is a good thing, but doesn't necessarily alleviate all the, psychological and emotional distress that you go through when you're experiencing extreme sensory deprivation.
Yeah, and when we talk about sensory deprivation, like mostly what we watched you do, honestly, was pace in that room. And I mean, a part of me wondered, was that out of anxiety or was it out of a strategy to sort of alleviate stress and move your body some and exercise? Or what was the thinking there? Were you just kind of doing the only thing that a human being can do when they're faced with hours of nothing?
You know, it's a little bit of both. When you think about it, that the cells there are, you know, probably 8x10, 9x10, something like that. And there's not much room in there to do anything. So it's either you're on your bunk or you're standing up. And when you're sitting in a box like that, all day long, and I spend 98% of my day without saying a word at all. And yeah. I have these, micro interactions with people, and those were meant a lot, but, at the end of the day, it's just you in this tiny cell. So I right. paced because, you know, I was full of anxiety and right. trying to work out a lot of the negative thoughts that were in my head and get to a positive place.
But I mean, for people who weren't watching the live stream, the pacing was always, you know what I mean? It was either pacing or sleeping, yeah. or writing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would pace for hours, and to be honest with you, you know, the thought crept in my head, like, I wonder how long it would take for me to wear out, you know, these concrete floors before they begin to wear on me.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And you know, you mentioned the writing, Bagby. I assume it was journal-like in nature, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, you know, so I do have to say that, the officers and the staff at the facility had to make the conditions of solitary confinement worse than what they would have done for one of their inmates, because on average, nationally, the conditions of solitary confinement are a lot more extreme than what you'd see at that facility, because at La Paz, they're more about safety and treating people fairly. Mm-hmm. Whereas at some facilities, you know, it's completely cruel and unusual. So I did request a pencil and paper, mm-hmm. and when I was writing, oftentimes it was train of thought and a lot of free writing just to work my thoughts out, because, you know, I was starting to have spotty thinking, and it was difficult to organize my thoughts, and that helped in a lot of ways.
Have you read it yet?
I haven't. I don't know if I'm ready to go back through all of the writings.
That might be weird.
Kind of do that again.
Yeah, it might be weird, yeah.
It you know, life feels kind of weird right now. I mean, we just spent 30 days in solitary confinement. You know, it's strange. It's like a piece of you is still there a little bit. And I think,
right.
you know, it'll take a little bit for that to...
Which pieces of paper ended up on the wall? I saw there were at least a few pieces of paper on the wall that you had put up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually an idea or outline for a feature film that I'm writing about solitary confinement.
Okay, so it's almost like here are the key elements, or here are some things that I'm working on. At least you feel like you're in some sort of process.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I'm that type of person who respects process a lot, and I think that everything is a process, really.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went in there, I wanted to fully immerse myself and make sure that I was understanding everything that was happening. When I was 16, you know, I was in solitary confinement for 11 months. Now I'm coming back as an adult and voluntarily subjecting myself to these conditions. And I think it would have been a shame if I didn't try to really understand what I was going through as a kid, and, you know,
yeah,
try to create a cathartic experience out of it.
Well, I mean, so I'm sure eventually some of those writings may be useful to you.
I'll bet some of the stuff you thought about at the beginning changed. Like some of the stuff, if you wanted to do that documentary about solitary confinement at the beginning, I'll bet some of your ideas are different now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that your thoughts change drastically while you're in there. Your perspective certainly is different after sitting in that box for.
Do you feel like a different person?
When I was the first time I went in, when I was a young man, I certainly felt like a different person after I left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like a different person necessarily this time. I feel like there's a little bit of work I have to do in reacclimating myself and kind of understanding what I just went through. So I'm getting myself into therapy. So that way I can.
I don't blame you.
Respect the process. Of what just happened.
You would often wait to eat, like they would bring you your meals, and I assume, you know, those detention officers that are bringing your meals or whoever brings those up there and slides them through the little hole in the door, I guess they sometimes did that and sometimes opened the door, but like, they're not up for a conversation. I mean, they're doing their job and whatever. I'm sure that, you know, it's a very common experience for people in solitary to want to maybe engage with those people and talk to, hey, tell me something about the outside world. Tell me something about today, or like, tell me something about your life or whatever it is. And I'm not sure how often those conversations tend to happen. They didn't really with you very much, except maybe with Kurt, because you knew that was, you know, that was what he was there to do. But it was interesting to me how you would sort of take that tray of food and set it up on that top bunk and then not necessarily scarf it down as you imagine somebody would who had nothing to do. Like, you would really take your time with it and sit with it sometimes for a pretty extended period of time.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, it takes a little while to, at least for me, to kind of get used to the food there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that was part of the reason why I take my time with it. Or, you know, it's also one of those things where like you've been waiting all day long. You know, you've had nothing to do, and now you have food in front of you. So, I mean, you'll scarf it down, and then
the high point is over.
The high point is over. You're done.
Yeah. you know, you gotta savor your moments.
Right. Absolutely, man. And then, you know, I tried to put myself in your shoes, and I think the point that you got across, I think most effectively, was that it's impossible to put yourself. You can't. That was why I thought the live stream was actually pretty useful for me, because I would spend maybe, you know, I'd have it on for 10 minutes and first thing in the morning, and then I'd go away and do a whole lot of things and like you, you know, in a pretty busy way and a very stimulated way. And then like after 3 hours, I'd come back and you'd be in the same position, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, think of all the things that I did and how quickly that 3 hours went by compared to what James just did. I have no idea how you did it. So my hat's off in a big way. I mean, it is incredible to me.
Thank you. I mean, part of the reason why I did it is raise awareness and start a discussion about solitary confinement. And, you know, when you think about that moment, you know, what you were just talking about, oftentimes it brings me to thinking about guys who spend decades in solitary confinement or years or whatever the case is. And it's unfathomable to me sometimes. I just can't, you know, and I'm sure I'm positive that the consequences of that are immeasurable.
They're not good for anybody. They're not even good for society. Yeah. You got to think though,
right.
I mean, there's probably a legitimate conversation to be had about how to, if we want to use solitary less or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
How to sort of control, you know, like there's like issues sometimes with, you know, inmates that are going to be disruptive or something. And I'm sure you get this all the time, that this is sort of one question about, like, if we're not going to use solitary because of these effects that it has, what can replace it? You know what I mean?
Right. You know, and I also want to mention again that La Paz County does a really good job of treating people in a humane and fair way.
Right, right.
And for instance, you know, they give people yard time every day. Which I didn't tag because again, I was, you know, replicating an experience that a lot of other people get, but they give people yard time every day. They give people access to books and, communication. And, you know, their facility, they don't have, because of that, they keep the facility very safe and they're doing a good job. When we're having a discussion about what we could do differently, I think there are a lot of things that we could do differently. It's not that like getting rid of solitary confinement is completely is something that I'm not saying that we should necessarily do that. I don't know if that's the answer. And my family, I don't have the PhD to make that call.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I do think that if we can have this discussion more on a national level, and we can get all of our and we can get law enforcement and corrections involved with advocacy groups and mental health professionals, I think we can find a better solution. This is a practice that we've been using since the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2017, and I think we can find a better way to do this.
And as I understand it, we use it more than almost any other first world nation.
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with, I think, solitary confinement is also a product of mass incarceration.
Right.
And, we make up 5% of the world's population, but yet incarcerate 25% of the world's prisoners.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it seems likely to me that, like, you know, it looks like that may be about to change in some respects, at least, because we have sort of a bipartisan agreement that wasn't such a great idea.
Hopefully I'm I don't want to be cynical, and I think that we have to wait and see. Think that with the new administration, he's I don't know exactly what law and order means to him yet,
it remains to be seen. James, I'm right up to the wire on time. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think is really important about that experience? I mean, I just think overall, when I look at what you did and what happened there, I mean, to me, it was useful. I've always sort of had, thoughts about solitary because I've read sometimes long magazine pieces and stuff like that about, the effects of solitary and how it leaves people and all that kind of stuff. My hat's off not only to you, but also to the La Paz County Sheriff's Office here and Kurt and those guys for allowing it. I think it's not a majority of departments that would be interested in allowing a project like that. And I thought it was brave and cool,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think because La Paz County was brave enough to do that and very transparent that most people I know, who have had a, different or perhaps maybe even negative perspective on law enforcement felt differently after the project. And I think that the community in general, is very proud of La Paz County for doing something like that.
Yeah.
So to be honest with you, I have so much respect for Captain Bagley and all the staff at La Paz County. And, I can only hope that people take a look at the way that they're doing things
I've often had the same thought. Yeah. Well, hey, I know you've got a flight to catch. I appreciate you jumping on the phone with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Kurt, thank you so much.
Thank you for including us. You included us. And when I called you today and said, you want to talk? You said, yeah. And I said, how about today? You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're awesome. Thanks for everything you do. And thanks for being you.
Yeah. And we look forward to seeing anything else that might come out of that project, James. It's really cool. And good luck with, kind of getting back into life and everything and the next chapter.
Thank you so much. And I hope you all have a great day.
Hey, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. James Burns, my friends, who was here in what we made solitary for over 30 days here in La Paz County jail. And he's a producer for Vice. And if you keep your eye on Vice, you might see more stuff out of this. But yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, Vice is a regular series on HBO, and they also, you can go to YouTube or wherever you want to watch, just put in Vice, Solitary Confinement. Right. They, in fact, they just put out a new episode that I tried to send you, but...
Did they? They got something new there?
Yeah, there's new coming out, so...
That's good stuff.